May Brussel, who for over 17 years has investigated and exposed political conspiracies worldwide. World Watchers International originates at KLRB, Carmel, California. Here's May.
Okay. We start over?
Yeah.
Good evening. This is May Brussel in Carmel, California. It is broadcast number 539, April the 4th, 1982. It is not, the machinery is off. If you hear a raspy sound, it is my voice. I was down in Los Angeles all week, caught a cold, or what I like to think of as a psychological cold that I might throw off by tomorrow or so. It was really chilly down there, and it affected my throat. So once again, you have to bear with that and listen to that sound. Interestingly enough, Ronald Reagan's going down to Barbados to be with Claudette Colbert and spent his Easter vacation down there, and it was her husband, Dr. Joel Pressman, who did the two surgeries on my throat. I might have mentioned this before on this program. At UCLA, he did one surgery about 27 years ago and another one about 18 years ago on the vocal cords. If Joel and Claudette knew what I was saying now, maybe I wouldn't have those vocal cords. But anyway, let's get back to the matters of the tax, the service, the Internal Revenue. It's time to mail in this week, if you're listening now, or you have mailed it in, or hopefully will mail it in soon, to the government for paying your taxes for 1981. Every once in a while, I don't know how often it is, I read on the air to new listeners the statement I sent with my taxes exactly 10 years ago. I sent in my taxes, the Internal Revenue, to the state taxes and the federal taxes, and with those taxes I sent a letter asking for a refund from the government. And those of you who are familiar with this, bear with me, because there's a lot of people who pick up this program continuously, new listeners, who are not aware of what May Brussel was doing 10 years ago. So April the 15th, 1972, after I sent in the taxes and with them, and that was 2 months before the Watergate arrests, I sent in a letter for the Director of the Internal Revenue. Dear sirs, enclosed is my tax form accompanied by my payment of taxes. Below the form, and you'll notice on your form, there is a space where a refund is requested. You notice I've marked that area and now request from you a return for the amount being paid. To support the existing government in any way is to give approval to legalized murder and assassinations of our former President John F. Kennedy, civil rights leader Martin Luther King, the anniversary whose death is today, April the 4th, and Senator Robert Kennedy, a candidate for the election in 1968. For 9 years, I have researched extensively these particular murders, as well as those of members of the minority races searching for their share of American opportunities. And I went into my documentation, which I said was extensive, and my cross-filing and the work and the examination at that time, this is 10 years ago, of over 300 books on political assassinations, espionage systems, and State Department history. Now, very few people were doing that 3 months before Watergate. And I know, I put in the letter, how murders are planned, who planned them, what banks were used, and where the guilty reside. There are secret societies existing today to perpetuate the wishes of a handful of extremely wealthy and powerful persons, and before the election of 1972, their names should be exposed. Among those is the Lincoln Club in California, a secret organization behind President Nixon. The National Archives contains proof of the conspiracy to kill President John Kennedy. The arbitrary date of 75 years to examine Kennedy's coat or x-rays or the evidence is too long. I'm familiar with the dirty games that the Internal Revenue plays in the scheme of things. Therefore, I'm not appealing to your reason, I wrote, in the matter. I simply tell you that I wish my money returned, because part of that money is going to be used for your budget of secrets that are locked up in the National Archives. The taxpayers pay between $60 and $80 million a year out of the budget for the archives for a classification system which is only necessary to conceal from the citizens what is really taking place. The Freedom of Information Act means little to the Internal Revenue. In tested cases, they have already turned it around and kept the information concealed. Now, I wrote that in 1972, and as I mentioned last week on this broadcast, in 1968, before Nixon was even in office, and in 1970, the German military intelligence came to our national archives to get volumes of indexes of the Nazi connections to people in Germany, Kurt George, the Chancellor, Kissinger, the Chancellor of Germany, and I wanted them to know that I didn't want to pay to guard the archives, because the archives locked up what I needed to know to prove what I knew already was existing in 1972. Then I enclosed on that claim for refund, there's a section there, attached is the letter that went off with my tax payment explaining why I want a refund. In addition to that information, I have other reasons. The Treasury Department, through alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, do not serve people of the United States. They hire convicts eligible for parole to commit crimes if they were released from jail. They hire assassins to kill labor leaders and civil rights leaders. They offer immunity from arrest for persons on drug violations and other criminal charges if they will kill, assassinate, plant evidence, infiltrate organizations. Prime targets are Black and Chicana groups who meet for legitimate purposes, not as criminals or anti-Americans. And of course, as I say, I got back from the Internal Revenue on one form and also from the other form a letter. The reasons given for your claim are not considered valid and your claim for refund is denied. That was one letter I sent with one set of taxes, and the other one was dated May 18th. Exactly 1 month before the Watergate arrest. Now, I was writing about murderers and assassins and the money coming out of the Treasury Department. Then right after Watergate, we had the scandals of Jack Caulfield threatening to kill James McCord, of Tony Lasowitz being up at Chappaquiddick, the Dorothy Hunt plane crash, and I can go into some of the Watergate murders related to Watergate that these people were doing. And G. Gordon Liddy was brought to the Treasury Department, the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, by Gerald Ford, who was on the Warren Commission. Now, I didn't know all that. I knew more. I knew about the killing of the U.S. Attorney Robert Meyer in Los Angeles after his talk with L. Patrick Gray, the U.S. Deputy Attorney General, and Gray went on to become the Deputy Director of the FBI until it was divulged that he was destroying evidence. And I knew about the activities of these people to hide the counterintelligence, the provocateurs at the Isla Vista riots in Santa Barbara, or the killing of Ruben Salazar in Los Angeles, the Chicano writer who had come back from Southeast Asia and was working for the LA Times. Now, the other letter I wrote in May, a month before Watergate, said, "Dear sir, sirs, enclosed is the form requesting a refund of my paid taxes for the years of 1971. Many people are presenting their tax cases to attorneys in objection to the Vietnam War. To my way of thinking, 10 years ago, Vietnam is a small fraction of a major sickness. The United States of America was overthrown by a coup d'etat November 22, 1963. The killing of President John Kennedy was done for the purpose of maintaining power in this nation that was tightened with clandestine controls following World War II. Nazi generals, scientists, makers of war machines and ammunition were located in this country with the help of John Foster Dulles, Secretary of State, and Alan Dulles, the director of the CIA. The state, and he was on the Warren Commission too, later appointed the Warren Commission to find out who killed Kennedy. The State Department and the intelligence agencies combined energies to relocate their Nazi headquarters in a tightly controlled enclave at Tyrol in Jamaica." Now, I wrote this 10 years ago, and Tyrol was in the society section of the Washington Post today, and the Monterey Herald, Betty Beale, the entourage of Ronald Reagan and all the who's who and what's what in Washington, go to Tyrol Bay, where the Nazis met after World War II, to plan their control of the world. And now Reagan is going to the Caribbean to wipe up that little nest and then sandwich them between the fascists of South America and America. I wrote in this letter, "John Connally, former head of the Treasury Department, until this week is a member of that group. The National Archives contains proof of this conspiracy. The documents are locked there by the conspirators. Now, I was talking about the Nazis and the relationship of Nazi generals to John Foster Dulles and Alan Dulles and John Connolly. And interestingly enough, the Nazis had come to the archives to empty them up several years before, but I didn't know it when I was writing this to the Internal Revenue. I wrote the tax that people paid support a budget of between $60 and $80 million to keep the documents locked up. I had that in the other letter. And then I continued, a democracy needs few secrets. All reports and evidence on murders such as John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and Martin Luther King belong to the people. The Treasury Department hires political assassins. The Justice Department manipulates their trials so the real facts and evidence are never exposed. The executive branch locks up the existing evidence of the conspiracies by order of the executive, the Treasury, the Justice, and the executive. And in conclusion, I wrote, my taxes would be used to pay public servants to dig our graves. When the proof of the escalation of the war is exposed, this was going on in 72 and it's still continuing, political assassinations will have been a major factor in allowing our Nazi, racist, barbarian behavior. And as I say, they wrote back to me, account number 549-326-484, the claim for refund is disallowed. The reasons given on your claim are not considered valid, and your claim for refund is denied. Now, a few years after that, I wrote an article for Midnight, the Globe paper that's on the stands at grocery stores and drug stores and at the airport. The Watergate curse, 30 key witnesses met violent deaths. And this had to do with various people who had information about Watergate who were killed, 30 people that were killed because of what they knew. And I had accused this group of being assassins and murderers and carrying on the murders through the Treasury Department, alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, as well as through the prisons. And so it goes. It's 10 years since I wrote that. I didn't get the refund, but the record shows where I was at the time and where I am today, and it's been a continuous path of trying to expose these people. Now, many of you saw 60 Minutes tonight and saw the Mr. Powell talking about the experiments on Americans in Japan and the germ warfare and how we brought the scientists, the Japanese scientists, to the United States and used his experiments on biological warfare and didn't prosecute them. They said we prosecuted the people at Nuremberg for the Auschwitz and Dachau experimentations, but I don't really think we did. Most of them got off. There is a book out on this subject. It's a bestseller in Japan on the atrocities. It's called The Devil's Gluttony. And the important thing is that while they were showing this on 60 Minutes, they had a large segment. They didn't bring out the point that I made about 5, 6, or 10 weeks ago on KLRB. The point I made was that the people that Mr. Powell wrote about in the Journal of Atomic Scientists who approved of the experimentation, who were willing to bring that material to the United States and not prosecute these people and glean some information from this wonderful bacteriological warfare, those people were linked to Douglas MacArthur and the United States Army. And I referred to that book, American Caesar, by William Manchester in 1979. It came out. And in there it tells, on page 184, how Sir Charles Willoughby, the intelligence advisor to Douglas MacArthur, whose name was Carl Weidenbach, W-I-D-E-N-B-A-C-H, thick Teutonic accent like Mr. Sonnenfeld or Fritz Kramer, or Henry Kissinger, another German admirer of Franco, was the man who told them in Fort Detrick, Maryland, go ahead and use this valuable information and gave approval to use it. The thing that is missing out of 60 Minutes is the connection of people who took aliases as like Englishmen who were actually Germans or Nazis as the chief of intelligence for the United States long before the war was over. He was the advisor to MacArthur in 39 as the intelligence chief. with two of the largest scandals going that have never really been exposed in book-length material are the Nazis that left the concentration camps and took Jewish names and disguised themselves as Jews and were placed all over the world to continue the anti-Russian propaganda and to praise and laud the Germans and to pass themselves off as Jews. And I believe, of course, I've said many times that Henry Kissinger is this one of these people. And the other one is, besides impersonating the Jews, is impersonating people such as Sir Charles, who isn't any Sir Charles at all, but a Carl Wittenbach. And to find out, I don't know if we'll ever know, how many people took away the Germanic names and took other names so that they would be acceptable as advisors for universities, hospitals, news media, and so forth. And it's an important thing to know that it was common to change their names so that after the war, while we planned the next war, we wouldn't have so many Germans running the scene in the Pentagon or in Navy intelligence or in our intelligence agencies. Now, one of the most dangerous articles I read in the past week, and there were a lot of them, I have hundreds of articles to share with you, was the intent to build a fake White House for the Secret Service. The Secret Service wants $10 million to construct a city street, a shopping center, a cluster of mock houses for training, but they want several hundred thousand to have a White House, the exact duplicate of the Oval Office, the East Wing, the Lincoln Bedroom. I wonder if they'll put the ghost in the Lincoln Bedroom or the Nancy Reagan with her china closet. Somebody wrote about that. A mock White House is horrendous. They want a Hollywood-style facade of the White House and Blair House as a training center and to simulate people going in and out. Now, what is the problem with having a front, a set, where this actor president is there and you have these buildings where you simulate these scenes of the Secret Service? The Secret Service goes through a certain screening, which certainly didn't save John Kennedy or stop the bullets from flying into Ronald Reagan, but they have a certain method of studying security in the White House, and the White House should probably be the easiest place to secure. You don't need a mock front. But if you were fortunate enough to see the movie on the murder of Salvador Allende and how the army stormed in and took the palace, or you read the Pentagon Papers, how Diem was murdered in Southeast Asia and taken out of the palace, and there's a palace coup. When you have a group of people that think they know what is good for the government, the army, that think that the government are too patsy, they're too soft, that we don't need a democracy. And again, this comes up, I'll go back to a quotation from the book on Douglas MacArthur. When you have people who think that they know what's best for your country, or General Westmoreland talking about the curtailment of freedom, once they have that diagram and it's disseminated in Defense Intelligence Agency, the Marines, the National Security Council, and so forth, the wiping up of the coup of 1963 will be a fait accompli. Just give them a model of the White House so they can storm in. If they think we're too soft to various governments, they'll storm in and take the White House. And the scene that took place in the movie Missing, I tell many people, is the United States 10 years from now. We have private troops in Florida and Alabama, in Mississippi. We have private armies getting ready for this and training to kill in New Mexico, in Colorado, armed to the hilt and very well trained. And they can storm in and have a palace coup that will be more overt. But the point is that the floor plans and the drawings were made available to them by the very people that have allowed these other things to happen so that they can do it very nice and clean and make it look like they stormed in suddenly where they actually have the plans to the White House. In this book on Douglas MacArthur, the quotations referring to Mr. Willoughby, Carl Wittenbach, were copied from that book and mailed to me by one of my researcher friends in the East. And there's a quotation of a man that worked with McCarthy and Willoughby in Southeast Asia, Lieutenant Colonel Richard Sutherland. And he said that Americans should abandon democracy in wartime, that Congress wasted too much time debating, that elections should be abolished and a dictatorship proclaimed. And that was the mentality of high military going back to 1939 and 1945. So I'm sure they haven't lost that frame of mind. And keep in mind that while some people treasure democracy and believe in it, there's other people that don't think it'll work, and we'd be glad to see it over. There's too many different kinds of people here, and too many people to support, to educate, to hospitalize, too many people to get your guard dogs to watch so that they don't come in and take what you have, if you have so much. And the point is that this mentality was prevalent in the late 30s. There was a plan to seize the White House, a book on it, The Plot to Seize the White House. And this idea has never left. So to put up a structure of the White House with all the doors and rooms, to me, is horrendous. I certainly wish that this would be stopped, but people have trouble recognizing we already had one coup, and so they can't even think of the dangers that would happen by disseminating this information. Now, there was a problem with the U.S. attorney down in San Diego that you might have read of last week. And this, again, it goes very deep into the way this country functions. And I brought the article that was in the New York Times and also left out of many other papers. It was written by Philip Taubman from the New York Times, but I didn't see it in local papers out here. And there's a two-pronged problem going on all the time. Very important information that should be disseminated to everybody is excluded. And the minute I see an article and I realize that it's important, I look to see how it's disseminated. And 9 times out of 10, the most important stories are not coming over the wire service. What that means is that if the Associated Press, United Press, don't pick up the story, most newspapers around the country don't get the story. A lot of people believe, as I believed when I started my research, that everything I read was shared by people all around the country. This is not true, and it depends on the newspapers that you take to get the information. Well, the New York Times has an article, "Ex-Mexican Official's Prosecution in Theft is Halted Because He Was a CIA Contact." And it's about the Justice Department has blocked the indictment of a Mexican in San Diego because he worked with the CIA and was a key American intelligence source in Central America. U.S. attorney in San Diego, and he was appointed by Ronald Reagan, William H. Kennedy, wanted since last November to prosecute this man because he was involved in an $8 million ring of taking automobiles out of San Diego down to Mexico. And he worked for the Central Intelligence Agency. His name is Miguel Nasser Haro, H-A-R-O. But he also was the chief source of our information about Fidel Castro working in El Salvador and Guatemala, and about the Cubans and the Soviet Union working with guerrilla forces in Central America. Sources asked not to be identified said Nasser passed on to Americans sensitive information about Soviet, Cuban, and Central American guerrilla forces. Now, you have a problem. The CIA says, look, we know he's implicated. We know he's no angel. But you have no choice but to use this kind of information on Central and South America. This is a double-barreled question that we should ask ourselves. Are these the only kind of agents we need to tell us the Cubans and Russians are in Central America? I mean, is this man saying this so that he can continue his $8 million swindle? Pardon me. The prosecutor in San Diego said that he thought it should be stopped because American insurance companies, car insurance companies, are causing inflated prices. The cars are being stolen. 600 were stolen in Southern California and taken to Mexico, sold at inflated prices. More than $8 million was involved. Now, if a man is making an $8 million hit on 600 cars and he was seen with stolen cars, wouldn't he lie to keep the operation going? Is his information accurate? And that's a very important thing to think about in terms of how we get our information, because the CIA claims he's so valuable. And if we can't get any more information about Russia and Castro than from this kind of person, how can we believe him? You know, at the time of Abscam, the argument was that the men involved in trapping Senator Williams and the other people, the men were criminals and you couldn't believe them. We'll apply this to the Central Intelligence Agency in Central America. We're using criminals. Can you believe them? Now, this Mr. Harrell began, he was the head of the Mexican intelligence. He was the former chief of Mexico's Directorate of Federal Security. He had a big job, and he was our most important source of Mexico and Central America. And now he's a suspect in an $8 million stolen car case. So would this person lie, as I said, for his $8 million deal, that then next year would be 16 and then would be 32, and our cars would be stolen and shipped down to Mexico in exchange for him telling Alexander Haig what Haig wants to hear, or Mr. Hinton and the ambassador of these countries telling us what they want to hear? They have him over a barrel because he has them over a barrel because he's providing the information they want. And what happened when this story came out? Well, Ronald Reagan wants to fire the official who leaked it. He doesn't want the person in office, the U.S. attorney, who leaked the story. Now, I think the way to clean up this country is to get rid of the official who is working for the CIA, who is a criminal. If we have a budget of $22 billion in intelligence, Army, Navy, their franchises, National Security Council, if we can't get better information than this sort of person who is a criminal, who's the director of the Mexico police and security system, who's also involved in these swindles, then we ought to forget our information. Remember how Alexander Haig brought up the fellow from Central America who testified under torture that there were Cubans or Russians in Central America, and then he brought up a map to show that these installations that were built for future military problems. And then it was proven that Somoza had put these in or ordered them when Somoza was in power, and they didn't come from Russia or Cuba. I think that the reason that the national press, the Associated Press, and most of the newspapers aren't carrying this wire service story on Mexico is because of the other scandals that fell through, and they can't keep making the State Department and the intelligence system look as bad as they really are, and they're even worse than they are. Now, this story came out of the New York Times March 28, 1982, and in the San Jose Mercury the same date. But according to this story, he was fired, the CIA man was dropped off while the investigation was going, and he stopped doing his work. This Miguel Nasser Harrell stopped and left his post in January of this year, of 82, as his liaison between the CIA and the Mexican Security Agency because of this new development of exposing him and the investigation going on since November about the stolen cars. Now, I have an article that many of you might or might not have seen. Again, it didn't get over the wire services. It's from the Mexico City Bureau to the San Jose Mercury. And this is about some deaths in Mexico that were so macabre, I didn't want to put them on the air until there was a real reason to see why they would take place. And now I'm convinced that the reason was that it would tie in to the chief of the Mexican security who works for the CIA, involved in the car swindle, who could be lying through his teeth about the causes of our having to arm and intervene in Central America. This story, and you might have read about it in your local papers, you might not, is called Mexico's Macabre Mystery Deaths. Police baffled by 12 mutilated bodies found in a canal. Now, the bodies are located in El Salto, which is north of Mexico City, towards the Mexican border. It's not too close. But 12 men were found, and their bodies mutilated, and there was speculation of a political motivation. And the reason I think it could be linked was the sophistication of the murder, and the techniques that are used on these men were used at Colonial Dignidad in Chile by the same CIA people, Michael Townley, and the Nazis down in Chile that were found with these men. The 12 men were found dead. There's no identification, no word from worried families. Nobody wants to identify them. No passports, no IDs, no billfolds. All lack of identification was gone. They're not peasants. They said they had shoes, expensive shoes, like $80 a pair. They didn't look like politicians either. They all look alike. They said they're not narcotic dealers. They don't have that look. They were killed within hours of being found. One man had a triangle cut across his chest where the heart had been and been taken out. Several had their throats slit. Two were decapitated. And then the article said whoever did it had to be insane. Arms missing, burns all over their body.